Ready to rock and roll?
Yeah.
Having any fun yet?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so we established what we were in the first step, and I'm reminded of this poem that Clint used to use it a lot. It says, "It is true I am a drunk, and my soul lives in the shadow of my emotions, and yet there have been songs for me, and my life has had its meaning, but the hand that made me and all I have ever been has deserted me. Would anyone know that my life, with all its ruined hours, has been a search for him?" And I believe that's what we're trying to do here, is come back home, to find that which made me. To, you know, Carl Jung knew that about us. I went to Akron one year, and I went to the archives down there, and it's one thing to read about the book that Carl Jung wrote to Bill Wilson, but to see it on the wall inside a glass case and very well taken care of, you know, and to see. Bill Wilson said, "How did you know that that Roland's problem was a spiritual problem?" He said, "I've always known that about alcoholics. You know, their search for their unity, which made them." See, when you and I were born, we were given that knowledge. I believe, like I said earlier, that when we got here, we had everything we were ever going to need. All we had to do was find it, to locate it, to bring it to the surface, you know? So I think all of our lives have been in pursuit of that. And we sought it in the bottle. We just got drunker and drunker and drunker because we couldn't find it. It wasn't anywhere. That's like that girl in the Days of Wine and Roses. She looked out over the city, and he wanted her to come in to be with him in AA, and she said, "I can't. I can't." She said, "I can't come in there. When I look out there on that dirty, dirty world, you know, blah, 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 you know, she can't stand it, right?" And she said, "But when I'm drunk, it's beautiful." And, you know, it's that change in all of us that happens. And I believe that we pursue that, you know, the illusion of that to the gates of insanity or death. That is the fate of the alcoholic, the gates of insanity and death. You can't escape it. If you be alcoholic, it will kill you. Over the years, I can't tell you how many people have died unnecessarily because they couldn't conquer this thing. And you know, there's a point in your life where you have to stand up, and you have to take charge of your life. You either take charge of your life and pay the consequences thereof, or not take charge of your life and pay the consequences thereof. And I, for one, I'm above the school of taking charge of my life completely. I love that poem, Invictus, that, what's his name, Nelson Mandela used to recite it every morning of his life when he was in captivity. If I can find it here anyway. So damn many papers and stuff around here. It's worth reading. So hold on a minute. God damn it. Does anybody know it by heart? You do? I wouldn't doubt it. So. Hold on a minute. Well, Marklet, I've sworn I brought this with me, but Nelson Mandela repeated this every morning. Hello, thank you. No, nope. Not that one.
One by
Henley? Yeah, that one by Henley. Yes, yes. I got to read this to you because it's so important. Thank you. Right. Here's this is by William Ernest Henley. And, you know, Nelson Mandela lived in a little cell 8 feet by 12 for 24 years, I think it was, in captivity. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. And here it is. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. And that is the truth. That is your place. That is my place. That is the place that we have to take. Win, lose, or draw. I mean, this power either is or it isn't, you know? And that's what we're discovering in this second step. It either is or it isn't, you know? And if it isn't, God damn it, you and I need to go get a fucking bottle of gin this morning and be drunk the rest of the afternoon, you know? If it isn't true, if this is BS here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and they're telling me yet one more good, sweet, kind story that I can't live by, you know, it's that's not what's going on here. This thing is real. I remember when I discovered this is, I thought, my God, this is real. This really works. This works every single time. Over and over and over, it works every single time. So, you know, we have to take our places and we have to be accounted for our actions, accounted for whatever. We are the captain of our soul. So I love that. I just absolutely love that poem. In this step, there's a whole lot of magic in here. On page 45, it asks a question in our book. It says, where and how to find this power? And it's all in there, but you have to find it. You know, it's like a little treasure map. Sandy Beach used to say, the book is the treasure map and God is the treasure. If you're really new and you don't like the idea of God, you don't like the word God or any of the religious, whatever, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Just stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous because we know how to not do this thing. And we'll show you how we don't do this anymore. And after a while, you will come to believe in something. It was said in meditation this morning. Find your own meditative source. Don't get my song or my this or my that, whatever. Go and find your own. And it will reveal itself to you. If you will look, you see, the seeker will be rewarded because if he looks, he will find. I don't know when. I have no idea when it happens. It doesn't mean you're going to find it like that, you know, but it does come. Trust me when I tell you that. It will come every single time. On page 45, it says where and how to find this power. On page 55 over there, all the words that I had capitalized, for instance, this morning, all of those words we found out meant God, right? Every one of them. Creative intelligence, power, maker, supreme being, blah, blah, blah. That all meant God, right? So, it's this word and how to find this power. And on page 55, it says, we found the great reality, which was also a capitalized word, right? Meaning God. So it says, we found God. This is not an AA secret, okay? This is known by so many societies throughout this world and religious societies as well, that it's uncanny. But for some reason, you see, Alcoholics Anonymous is peculiar to you and me. We get it. We understand it. We can hear it in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we can't hear it out there. Like I said earlier, like I like the idea of the three-headed cow or two-headed, have to go down and look at it and all that, and blah, 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 blah. But I always come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. All of the roads lead me back here because this is where I made the great discovery, and this is where my life unfolds on a daily basis, you know. So it says, we found the great reality, meaning God, deep within us. And it says, and the final analysis, meaning after this, in the last analysis, there won't be any more. It is only there that he may be found, you know. So I can pray. I can pray to something. There may be something out there. But if you know how vast this universe is, I don't know if you know the guy, Neil deGrasse Tyson, okay, he's an astrophysicist. I love this guy. And he did a little thing on a little video on Cosmos. And he shows the galaxy, the Milky Way. And then you see this Milky Way and how huge and how vast it is, you know. And then there's this little tiny dot in the middle of all. And he says, this is us. This is the Earth. No, it's a little tiny dot, you know. We're on this planet. This all looks pretty big to us and all that. And yet, in the overall picture here, it's just a little tiny dot, a little tiny something out there in the universe. So I realized through him that this thing is so vast that it's almost ununderstandable. I can't quite grasp it. I can't quite get my head around how big this really is. And that's why I said to you earlier, this thing is molecular. I was born with it. It's part of me. It's part of you. What do the Siamese say when they greet you? Namaste, do they not? What are they saying? They're saying, the light of God in you, me, salutes the light of God in you. If you could only see me, you think you see me this morning, right? This is what you guys call Luther. This is so that you recognize me across campus, you know. It's not who I really am. If you could really see me, really, you would see nothing but light. That's all I am. That's all you are. That's all it all is light. You know. So, and when this dies, this is what I walk around in. But that which is within me was created. It will never die. It was never born. It will never die. It always was. What did Jesus say? I am Alpha and Omega. I'm the beginning and the ending. I always was. I always will be. And so will you. You and I were created. So, when this dies, I move out. I don't know where I go. But I don't think I go to the bad place and all that kind of stuff. All the stuff that I was brought up with, you know, to fear and all of that. And someone said it earlier today, God is not fear. God is love. That's all he is. And there is no otherness to God. There is no otherness to God. There is only love. You and I have this twisted perspective, you know, and we accuse one another and accuse ourselves and beat ourselves up mercilessly when God isn't doing that. God is only love. That's all he is. And he that abideth in love, trust me when I tell you that, abideth in God. And God abideth in him, because it's reciprocal. That's why Clint said to me, God will love you through me, and he will love you through me. That it's reciprocal, that we have this thing. And when you and I, this is one of the reasons that you and I feel so good when we're together. Because when you and I are close and together, this thing passes back and forth between us. And we have that good, warm feeling, and that feeling of a relationship and not being alone, you know, like I read that part of Contact to you earlier. That we all think we're alone, and it's not possible. We cannot be alone. So this is probably the greatest secret that I have ever learned in my lifetime, that great reality is within me, and it's accessible, that I can reach it. Now, do I have a running dialogue with God? N-O. No, I do not. You know, I understand that that's the type of psychosis, actually. you know? But I also believe this. God is not deaf. I only have to ask him once. See, my time frame and his time frame is really different, you know. My time frame is, I want it right now. And his time frame is quite different. And it's far more perfect than mine. By the time I get down the end of the road, wherever it was, and I see all of the stuff that I had to go through to get there, you know, then I understand it had to be that way. I wanted it this way in the beginning, But that's not what happened. I had to go down through this trail and all these changes and stuff and blah, 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 and get down the end of the road. And then I see, aha, it had to happen this way. So you and I are caught up in some sort of magical thing that that if we simply come here and just give ourselves over to it, just this complete, and that's what the second step is trying to do here. It's trying to get you and me to get to a third step where we understand that God can do this for us, and so that we can get into a third step here and get it taken care of. So anyhow, let's see, where am I? See how I get off on these tangents. The location of God. Oh, it says also on page 57, it says another, the ending part of this is, when we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. And I, for one, don't think you can draw near to God. You'll be on your knees forever if you want to try to draw near to God. You just can't get there. But especially in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you will come here, give your phone number out, help set up a meeting. You don't smoke, take the cigarette commitment, you know. whatever it is, pass your card out, pass your name out, put your hand out, go help set up the meeting and tear it down or whatever. And it seems like in the middle of all of that, somewhere or another, something comes along and will introduce himself to you. I believe that each of us in this lifetime, at some place or another, are given that opportunity, whether you're working a program or not. It just happens to be better if you're working a program because it's systematic and it's going to happen sooner or later, hopefully sooner. You know, so many instances of that where I finally came to realize and finally came to believe in something. I told you about the shower the other night. That was an instance completely taken out of context, you know, where I saw the blood going down the drain, and I'd been up on that mountaintop all night, and my knees were torn, and my pants were torn, and my leg was scraped all the way to the bone, and you couldn't distinguish the color on my Tony Lama's boots anymore, and the seat of my pants was worn out, and I'd gotten in a wrestling match with a jumping Choya in the night, and all the other, you know, I didn't take any water with me, so of course I'm pulling these prickly pear cactuses off, and I'm eating on that. So I had stickers down my throat as well as every other, you know. So anyway, that's when I was in that shower and watching the blood go down the drain, I knew two things for sure. For sure that God uses whatever is at hand, see, to reveal himself to you. If you're patient and obedient and listen, especially listen, stay alert, try to stay awake, and be obedient, because he will reveal himself to you. Because in that shower, I understood that I was an alcoholic. Now, mind you, I was 9 years sober. And I understood that I was an alcoholic at a level that I never knew it before. I knew that I came that close to being drunk, you know, and that something far greater than I keeps me sober. But I can't do that. Everybody in the world's tried to keep Luther Wood sober. I've been drinking since I was 16 years old, since the right out of the chute with my friend George, and got so drunk on a bottle of Tokay wine and fell over in a 7-foot trench, and everything got so hysterically funny, and blacked out, passed out, and couldn't wait to do it again. The most important thing on my mind was where are we going to get it today, and how long are we going to be able to have it, and so on and so forth. You know, so everybody and his brother was trying to. I can't tell you how many people I've sat in front of that tried to help me, and they were unable to turn that key, unable to help me until I came here and heard this. I heard the magic in Alcoholics Anonymous, that there was an answer here for people like me. I just thought I was crazy. I knew I was going to be locked up, and that's where I was going to spend the rest of my days. I was always on the run. I was on the run because they were coming after me with the butterfly on net, you know. come get me and put me away. I got into some really crazy places, you know. I mean, really serious places where they do things like electric shock and cold baths, you know, with your head sticking out of a terrible, terrible, terrible places. They didn't have recovery houses when I first got sober. And I was out there. They didn't know where to stick people like us, so they just stuck us in the nut house. And oh my God, I remember one time I wound up in the VA hospital in Long Beach. Every time I go by that place, I remember this instance. I was in there, and I had run through a cleaner's that was next to the place that I worked, and I struck my head on a steel railing. And it knocked me silly is what it did, and they took me to the VA hospital. And I remember that morning when I came to, sort of, I was sitting in front of this doctor who was, she had written on my folder in letters about an inch tall, chronic alcoholism, you know. And I said to her, I said, wait a minute here. She was from Lithuania or someplace, you know. And I said, I'm not here for chronic alcoholism. I said, I struck my head on a, you know. And she looked at me and she said, I will not change my diagnosis. And I thought, you bitch. you know. And then something happened to my head that afternoon, and I could no longer speak English. I could only speak French. So they bring in this doctor who spoke French, and he and I spoke French the rest of the afternoon until my mother and dad came. You know, my poor mother and dad, I nearly drove them crazy with my antics and all the stuff I was into. My mother's sitting there, and my dad, and she's crying and carrying on, and this doctor has my big folder down, and he has all these papers and documents he wants them to sign. And he said, you have to sign right here. We want, this is permission to give Luther a lobotomy. See, this is what the places that we put ourselves. They don't talk in those terms anymore, but they were serious about this stuff when I was growing up. And a lot of fear behind all of this. And my mother was carrying on and crying and blowing her nose, you know. And my dad, who was one of the calmest people on the planet, wasn't very calm either. And so neither one of them would sign this paper stating that the state could give me a lobotomy. And I remember when he slammed my... I could understand English, I just couldn't speak it. And he... he slammed my folder together. It sounded like a shot going off, you know. And he said, it doesn't matter if you sign this or not. He's in here. He's the ward of the state. We can do as we wish, you know. So those are the places that we put ourselves as a direct result of our drinking. And we have to find a way out of that. And the only thing I know of that works and where you can have a good time while you're at it is in Alcoholics Anonymous, because you know what? We absolutely insist on enjoying life. We're not a glum lot at all around here. We try to see the humor in everything. There's a lot of it, especially if I can see the humor in me. You know, I have a sign in my bathroom, many of you have seen it, and it says, blessed are they who can laugh at themselves, because they will never cease to be amused. You know? You know, and if you knew how many times I run around the house saying, oh, that's a bright idea, Luther, that's real, that's terrific, you know. My friend Shirley said one more smart thought, she'd have died drunk, you know. So anything I come up with, any bright ideas, any bright thoughts or whatever, I generally check it out with someone, my sponsor or whatever, like, what do you think about this? Because I would like a second opinion on a lot that goes through my head today. And that doesn't mean I'm a sicko and I never got well and I never got any place in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I did. I feel better down deep inside where I live than I've ever felt in my whole lifetime. I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable in my skin. I'm comfortable with me. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know that I'm a human being. I know I'm doing the very best I can do. And I know if I could do better, I would do better. You know, and when I know better, I will do better. And we're talking with our up this morning about putting the goddamn hammer away and stop beating yourself to death over the most inconsequential financial things that don't amount to anything. What does that have to do with this little pea-sized object in the galaxy? You know, nothing. You know, nothing at all. Trust me when I tell you that. So anyway, once I've found the location of God there, and then when I draw near to him, he will disclose himself to me. And that's happened to me. I cannot tell you how many times over and over and over. We're in a progressive thing here. If you stay in it for the long run, more and more and more and more is revealed as time goes on. It's like I told you that we're going on a journey and neither one of us is coming back. It's the journey is for a lifetime, and it takes a lifetime to live this journey. So the experience that I had also with Flint Hodges was of an educational variety. I believe it probably has more value than all of the other instant, explosive, magnet, 12 experiences that I've had in my lifetime, you know, because I earned it. I earned every single one of them. I set out on this journey with him and agreed that everything in this book was the truth and that I could rely on it. And so I set out to work these steps as if my life depended on it, which it did. And I did everything that I was told to do. It was an amazing, amazing process. And I wouldn't trade the experience of an educational variety for anything, because all the other things are very nice. You know, Bill Wilson had some experiences. When he came out of the church in Winchester Cathedral and saw that old doggerel there about the kid dying from drinking small cold beer. He had quite an experience there. And then he talks about it later about that it dissipated, you know, and just kind of like went away as a direct result of his of just that's what happened, you know. But the thing here, those experiences we cannot stay in those zones. If you are in that zone forever, I think you just kind of like burn up. And so we don't live there. We live here on this earth and this plane. And those things will come again and again and again. But this experience of an educational variety was something that can't be shaken. I've had a lot come down the road. A lot of things, a lot of upsets, and in all that time, I've never had to take a drink or a pill or anything. I've never had to seek refuge in any of that kind of stuff ever since I came here, and that's the thing that it's unshakable today. You cannot shake my belief, period. Do I know what it is? No. Can I describe it to you? I said earlier, no, I cannot describe this. I only know that it's so vast and so huge and so big that I can hardly wrap my head around it. And the strange thing about it, Bill Wilson talked about it being difficult to believe in a power that was close to him, you know, and personal to him. And yet, isn't that what we found here? Something that is close to us and personal to us, because it's right here in me, and it's right there in Ray, and it's right there in Rick, and Mike, and Perry. It's right here. And that's why when we come together, it's accentuated, it's enlarged, and we feel it greater, and there are more of it, because there is more of it. You know, more of it means we get to that circle where it's all of it, every place. So, it's so important to come to believe in this power. Now, like I said too, it's impossible to find God. Yeah, so it would be silly to try to go and look for it. We go and set up meetings and do all this stuff and do what's in front of us to do. And then somewhere along the line it gets revealed to us as a direct result, especially of working these steps. This will happen to you. I don't know when. But it does happen. And that's that. So We come to the conclusion in step two that God's everything or he's nothing. Don't you love that? He's everything or nothing. You know, he's the entire circle with everything in it, or he's nothing, which is it? And I don't know anyone that says, well, he's nothing. I don't know anyone that says that. We all come to believe that God is everything. And I believe that that idea changes and manifests itself as time goes on and gets bigger and larger and more comprehensive as time goes on. We've gotten to a point where we know at step one, I'm an alcoholic, I can't do this. We reach step two where we realize that there is a power, that God is everything, and that he can do this, okay? So we get to a place in our process here where we have to have the ability to turn this over to this power. If I can't, God can, then I have to let him do that, okay? The only thing about the third step is I have to really, really understand fully is that once I do this, it's irreversible. So it's important that I understand what I'm doing. And the book tells me that. It says, we thought carefully, you know, before going into this. Because God is not capricious. He is playful and yet not playful concerning this. You have to understand what you're doing. I liken the third step to like firing a pistol. Once you fire it, it cannot be unfired. So once you hear people saying, I'll take a third step and I take it over and over and over and over. You can't do that. Okay? You can do that, but it's mental masturbation. It's silly. You can't. That's not something that you can do. God doesn't play those little games. Once you've turned this over, the book is telling me that I utterly, completely abandon myself to God here, okay? And what they're saying there is that essentially our lives are none of our business once we do this. It doesn't mean that we become robots. We don't have a free will. Of course we do. We can do anything we want to do. We're free agents. And I believe I said this earlier, the idea for you and me is to learn how to work in concert with this power. So when I go out that door, I'm inclined to say, Father, if I go out that door, will you go with me? I call him Father because working this step, I talked about him being the director, the principal, the son, the father, the son. I elected him to be my father, you know, because that's the way I see him, you know. I see him as a father. One of my favorite paintings in the world was by Rembrandt. I don't know if you know Rembrandt was one of us. And Rembrandt died a pauper. And he loved the story of the prodigal son. He friggin' loved it. It's my favorite painting in the world. It's huge. It's as tall as this wall, and it's in the Heritage Museum in Moscow, Russia. It was one of Catherine's. And it shows the, Wilson called God his newfound friend. And I don't know if you ever had a newfound friend. Somebody that would even carry your books for you. Somebody that was always glad to see you. You know, no matter what, he was always glad to see you. And we make friends like that in Alcoholics Anonymous, that we're always glad to see you. We're busy people. We get involved. We live very productive, busy lives. And so when we come together, we're glad to see each other and spend whatever time we have allocated for each other. The painting shows, Rembrandt was fascinated with the prodigal son, and he shows him as the gay blade sitting on the sofa and the girls on his lap and the wine glass, you know, and the hat with the feather in it and all of that, you know, the whole story. And you can almost see the progression. He painted him so many times, you can see the progression of the prodigal son all the way to the end, you know. And the last painting he did of him was of the son who came home. It's called The Return of the Prodigal Son. And it's your story, and it's my story too. It shows him, the boy's come home, and he's kneeling at his father's feet. And he's in his underwear. It's a long garment, very thin, and it's dirty and torn, and his shoes are worn down, and his feet, and he's dirty, and he's been working in a pig farm, you know, Jewish boy working in a pig farm. And it kind of occurs to him, my father's people at home are eating better than I am and living better than I am. And he had asked his dad for his fortune so he could just go out and live it up, and which is what he did. And he wasted it, you know. And he realized that his dad's people that worked for him lived better than he did. So he went home. And he didn't go home to be the son. He went home to work, to do whatever, you know, and just to live a little bit better, you know. That's not what happened. And this is like the Newfound Friend, and this is Wilson's idea of God, and it's certainly my idea of God. You see the boy with his head buried in his father's bosom, you know, and here's the brother over here. He's not happy to see him at all, you know. He's in all of his finery, you know, like, what's this asshole doing, you know? You know, he's coming back to get more money or whatever, you know, however we think. And what the father was doing is he has his hands around the boy and he's pulling him to his bosom because he's glad to see him and welcome him home, you know. And he said, kill the fatted calf. The boy was dead and now he lives, you know. So they had a party, and that's the God that I've come to understand in Alcoholics Anonymous, who is far more generous than I and much, much less critical than I. That's why I say be very careful about judging yourself and judging anyone else or whatever. So I think we're going to take a break here, aren't we? Yes.